Raise your hand if AI is already showing up at work and nobody really told you how or why. Cool. Same, same. Today, we are talking about when HR should say yes to AI, when they should absolutely say nope, and how community plays a role in not losing our minds in the process. Let's go and get into today's playdate. Hey, friends, my peeps, welcome back to Workday Playdate with Improve It. I am Erin Diehl, and if this is your first time here, welcome to the Playdate. We talk about work, leadership, and culture, but we do it with play, improv, and a whole lot of humanity. So this month on the show, our theme is community, because let's just be real, work is not happening in a vacuum. It's happening in Slack channels, in team meetings, in late night emails, and sometimes in group chats that were supposed to be about dinner plans. Today's conversation fits perfectly into that theme because AI is not just a tool decision. It's a people decision. And for all my peeps out there, that involves you and your people. It affects trust, it affects safety, it affects inclusion, it affects creativity, and it affects how connected teams actually feel at work. I'm so excited about today's guest because this is not a fear-based doom and gloom AI episode. This is a thoughtful, grounded, practical conversation on the playground about how HR leaders can make smart choices without shutting innovation down or putting people at risk. Today, I am joined by John Rood, and we are breaking down AI tools, governance, training, and how leaders can decide when to say yes, when to pause, and when to say nope, not yet. Hi, my peeps. If you're tired of leadership development that feels heavy, rigid, or performative, we've built something different. Leadership Playground is a joy-filled reset from the corporate grind. It's a vibrant community designed specifically for people leaders navigating burnout, change fatigue, and the pressure to do more with less in an increasingly automated world. Now, through improv-based experiences and practical leadership exercises, you will master the human skills that technology cannot replace. Confident communication, creative thinking, adaptability under pressure, authentic connection, courageous leadership. Now, this is not a box-checking program. Let's get that straight. It is a space to loosen the corporate armor, experiment without fear of failure, and lead with renewed confidence and courage. Now, our new experiences begin the first of every month with live workshops on the second Tuesday of every month at 1 p.m. Eastern. If you are ready for a break from the corporate grind and return to human leadership, join us on the playground. You can find the link to Leadership Playground in the show notes. Can't wait to see you there. Come play. All right, peeps. So here's the problem. AI is moving fast, like faster than your company's last policy update fast. Employees and team members are already using AI, whether leaders know it or not. It's writing emails. It's creating presentations. It's summarizing meetings. It's probably rewriting job descriptions at midnight. And HR is sitting in the middle trying to balance innovation, compliance, ethics, legal risk, and culture while also not becoming the department of no. The real tension is this. If you move too fast, let me say that again. If you move too fast, you risk safety, bias, and trust. Now, if you move too slow, people are already moving without you. And this is why this conversation matters so much. Because AI decisions are not just technical decisions. It's truly a leadership decision, and they shape how safe people feel showing up, experimenting, and contributing inside your community at work. And this is why I wanted John on the show today. We all live in this intersection of technology, people, and responsibility, and we need to talk real, not just buzzwords. So let's get into the playdate with my guest, John Rood. Thank you. Oh my God. John, I know you. I don't know if you know me, but I know you. And I've seen you in a webinar. And I was like, John is awesome. And now he's here on the Playdate.
Here we are.
Here we are. Welcome straight from Chicago, John Rood.
Well, thanks, Aaron.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let me ask you this. I am so excited to chat with you. I've seen you in action. I know that you know so much when it comes to HR, and when it comes to AI. And our peeps, this is the question that is burning everyone's minds. Is AI good? Yay or nay? Should we do it? So knowing that's where we're going to go today, and then knowing the theme of this month, we always have a theme that guides us, is community. What's an intention you want to set for our time together?
I would love it if we had high energy around a difficult topic. This can be, AI can be sometimes exciting, but sometimes a little dry, particularly when we talk about, you know, safety and responsibility and compliance and all that good stuff. But let's keep it light and interesting for the audience.
I love it. That's what we do. We like to play. But I also know AI is like heavy handed, right? You've got and I remember this from your webinar. You've got the early adopters. You've got the people that are the late bloomers. What do you call the people that are late to the party? What are those called?
I think late bloomers is a fine word to call it, or the late adopters.
Late adopters. Okay. And you got kind of like the middle peeps, right? I would consider myself a middle peep at this point, just to give you full transparency where I am. But I will say I use one in particular, which I'm sure most of the peeps listening do, ChatGPT. And I'm going to come out and say it. It's my therapist. It's my doctor. It's my friend. And I love it. So let's just hear it from all angles. That's just where Aaron Deal is coming from. But the peeps have their own opinions. And I want to just start where our peeps are at. We have so many people leaders who listen to this show. And when HR leaders hear the words AI, tools, what do you think, or what are the reactions that you're seeing? And what do you usually see? And then my next question to that is, what do you wish you saw?
So there's kind of two roles that AI has with regard to HR leaders. And one of them is, how do we use AI tools in our actual work as HR professionals? So how do we use AI to sort out our resumes and get better job candidates? How do we use it to do onboarding? How do we use AI to do people management, performance management, et cetera, et cetera? So that's one big chunk of it. But the other big chunk of it is for us as, you know, learning and development leaders, and us as the folks who are in charge of kind of bringing the entire organization along with us, there's this question of, you know, how do we think about the right policies for AI in our organization? How do we think about the right training? And that's the other big chunk of work that that HR leaders want to talk about. And to answer your question, I mean, I think that people are thinking about the right questions, the right issues. Usually, as HR leaders, we're thinking about how do we take these great new tools and put them in the organization in a way that makes sense. And then the challenge is, and some people are thinking about it this way, but some people aren't, is, you know, how do we also safeguard the organization from a, you know, a privacy perspective, a fairness perspective, a bias perspective? Those are all important issues too.
Yeah. Oh my God. I see it both ways, right? And I'm a small business owner. So we have about 10 people in the office, and I'm like, use it at your discretion. I also understand there's a lot of like high proprietary information in a lot of organizations that if people got on just general ChatGPT and started chatting away, could leak information. So I get this from all angles. So let's talk about that. What should companies actually do to ensure that safe implementation of AI beyond just saying, oh, there's a policy, you know, in our workbook or handbook somewhere? What are you seeing? What would you suggest to a peep listening today who's like, where do I start?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the work that we do at our firm is around implementation of what we call AI governance. And so AI governance is kind of like the totality of the policies and the procedures that make AI safe. Now, that scales up and down a lot with the size of the organization and with kind of where the organization is positioned with regards to, you know, compliance obligations, regulations, et cetera. So for you and me, as small business owners, like we've got some people, we've got some proprietary data, but we're not working with people's like medical records or financial data or whatever, right? So, you know, for smaller organizations who are using AI, but not maybe creating AI and who are not in highly regulated industries, kind of a lighter touch makes sense. So to your question, like, what does that actually mean? One of them is, I think that every organization needs an internal AI use policy, right? So that governs how do the people within our company use AI? What are they permitted to do? What are they not permitted to do? And then importantly, how do you move AI projects from, you know, someone would like to do this, like the marketing team would like to use the software, through getting the right approvals to actually having that implemented in a safe way. So some organizations I've seen, like that's like a page or two of policy. And oftentimes that's totally fine. Sometimes that's a little bit longer, but that's the place to start for HR. I mean, we're used to making people policies, like that's what we do. So that's a very kind of appropriate starting point for HR.
Can I just ask a dumb question? And there's no dumb questions, just dumb people. I truly believe this, John. Okay. So let me ask you this. Do you think ChatGPT is the most used AI platform right now inside of organizations? And is that generally where you start? Are there other AI platforms that you're seeing people use on a regular basis that need more governance?
It's funny that you say that because I use ChatGPT. So we use. Like we've got the enterprise version, everything. But when I started to go and do this work in larger organizations, I was surprised to find that the number one corporate AI platform oftentimes turns out to be Microsoft Copilot. And the reason is it's embedded with the Microsoft ecosystem. So the company's already got, you know, Microsoft Teams and they use like all the Microsoft stuff. And then they get Copilot like bundled in with that or for free or whatever. So it's less like someone said, you know, we're going to compare the top three AI platforms and pick one. It's like, well, here's Teams. It's fine. I mean, it ultimately runs on, or here's Microsoft Copilot. It ultimately runs on ChatGPT underneath. So people just kind of do that. And so much of my time, like the number one issue that HR leaders have, like at a very tactical level, is this issue where the senior management at the organization has said, we're going to do AI. That's how they always say it. They say, we're going to do AI. What does that mean? Well, oftentimes in many organizations, that means that someone has bought or enabled Microsoft Copilot for everyone in the organization, and then provided no training or guidance as to how to actually do it. But now we like are doing AI.
Yeah. Okay. See, that makes a lot of sense to me. I'm not a Teams person. We're not a Microsoft team.
Neither am I.
We're a Slack team. And I actually, no offense, Microsoft, love ya, will not do a workshop on Teams. It is hard. It is arduous. But I didn't really realize that. That's really interesting. But it's all kind of ChatGPT powered. I get it. Okay. Yeah. I'm loving this conversation. I'm learning so much. Let me ask you about this because we are a training company. You know, a lot of people who you work with are training companies. So what role does training really play in an AI rollout? And what happens, like you just mentioned, if a company skips it? They're like, here's Microsoft Pilot, Copilot. Use it. What happens when they skip it? What are you seeing?
I think there's kind of three layers of training. And so each one carries kind of its own cost to do it. And then also, to your point, risks of not doing it. The kind of the top level of training, which I think everyone needs, is some really basic training, which we usually call AI literacy, and it's around safety issues, right? So it's around issues of like, don't upload, you know, patient medical information, don't upload, you know, our corporate financial data to, you know, the free version of ChatGPT or whatever. And of course, we go beyond that, right? So we talk a lot about, you know, how are kind of the, like the scams that in the workforce, like we're trying to defend against, things like phishing, for example, how does that kind of become turbocharged in the AI world, and how do we avoid that, right? So that safety piece, I think, is really important. And like for me, in the next couple of years, like HR organizations and L&D leaders are going to say, okay, we've got to have our sexual harassment training, our you know, our data security training, and we're going to have our AI safety training,
yeah,
right? We're going to have, everyone's going to have those things.
Oh my God, 1,000%.
Yeah, absolutely. So the second kind of bucket of training that we love to see and do is, how do you actually use these tools, right? So a lot of times that's how do we kind of move beyond like really basic prompts into more kind of structure? How do we bring like different kind of data sets into the AI that we're using? And ultimately to get better and more accurate and more personalized results that make sense in the context of our business, right? So that's a really fun training. Everyone likes to learn that stuff. But the third aspect of it, which I'm really excited about, and it's like, this is what the next 5 to 10 years is going to be, is around how do non-technical people use AI to start accomplishing technical things, right? So the gold standard, I think, ultimately in a company is going to be like, let's say that, you know, you're an HR leader and, you know, you've got, 10,000 resumes and you want to sort them in a particular way to pull out some particular sort of data, right? That's the thing where like, maybe you'd like to have a tool to do that. Previously, you maybe have to go out to a vendor, or maybe you have to go to your IT department and have them like build a script for you. Most professionals in 5 to 10 years are going to be able to do that themselves, build that software themselves internally with AI tools, right? So that's what we love to kind of research and teach now is, you know, if, and it starts not with technology, it starts with workflow, right? It starts with saying, you know, hey, we've got this process that we use. It's very manual. It's got 27 steps. How do we figure out which of those steps can be automated? How do we build that automation? How do we put it into our workflow? It's enabled by technology, but it's a people issue, right? It's a people question of how the organization actually works.
Okay. John, it's so cool. You know, let me just piggyback on that for myself. Okay. Like as a small business owner, I am the IT department. We have an outsourced IT department. But for example, yesterday we have onboarded some new team members who are awesome. And we were getting them set up on our phone system, which is like an online phone system. And old me would have called, it's called Grasshopper. I would have called Grasshopper. I would have sat on the phone and been like, what do I need to do to get this set up operationally? Within 3 minutes, I chat GPT, what do I do to get this person successfully their own extension? And boom, bang, bada boom, we had a new extension and it was so easy. So I love that you're saying not only are they going to build like, not only is it going to be used for problem solving, but it's also going to be used for building their own internal systems, which is just crazy and wild to think about. I hope you are enjoying my conversation with John Rood. We will be right back after a quick break from our sponsors. Thank you for supporting those who support the show. You are listening to Workday Playdate on the Passionstruck Network. Now back to my conversation with John Rood. Okay, I have a couple fun questions, all right? So
yeah,
what's an example? And maybe you can share a name. You know, this is a nice question. So what's an example of a company or a team that's doing this integration well? And when you say that, like, what are they doing well? Why is that different?
That's a great question. I've got a couple of our clients in mind. And so I'll put them together and think about like, what a successful team actually look like? So I think a team that is using AI successfully, like an HR team that's doing a great job with AI, number one, they have a great relationship with the other parts of the organization, which enables them to work cross-functionally on the AI policies and the AI rollout, right? So AI is too big to be kind of like owned by one part of the organization. It's not just an HR thing for sure, but it's not also like not just an IT thing.
Right.
So a great HR leader and a great HR team is able to go out and say, hey, we've got to have a policy where we're able to review and approve new AI systems relatively quickly so that we're not holding up the marketing team, the sales team, like whatever, right? So that's about, you know, how do you create those processes that go across the different buckets or silos of the organization? I think that's a really important one. The other big part of it that I see that HR leaders really have a big part in making happen is from a cultural point of view, enabling a sense of experimentation or innovation around AI. So there was this statistic in the MIT Journal, and this is kind of like one of those like bombshell things in our AI industry, that said that 95% of AI implementation pilots in large companies fail, right? So 19 out of 20 of these are failing. And when you kind of got into the data, what was happening was the ones that failed were oftentimes very top down. So it was the CEO again saying like, we need to do AI. And so now we've bought everyone Copilot, so go use it. And that was like, that's usually a failure, right? Because it doesn't accomplish anything. Ultimately, what AI and automation is really good at is oftentimes very granular within the organization. And that means very bottom up, right? So it's not the CEO saying, we're going to totally do AI. It's someone on the marketing team saying, hey, here's a thing that takes me 5 hours a week. I can figure out how to automate that to save that 5 hours a week for our organization. And then we can roll that out, right? So the organizations that do a good job of that are pushing AI training and implementation further down in the organization and enabling the people who are like not the CTO, not the CEO, right? Just like the normal people in the organization we're enabling them to actually create with AI.
Okay. So many questions within that answer. I love it. When they are training from the bottom up, are they creating, like how, what is an example of what that training looks like? Is it, here are some prompts that I'm using that give me these results? Is it, here's what you can input to give you this output? What are some of those? I know every organization is different, but just for the person right now who's like, okay, what are you talking? What do we talk about in this training? Because, you know, here's where I'm at with ChatGPT. I get on the voice thing and I just talk and then I hit send. And this thing knows me so well. I got my year wrapped. I was like, God, we're best friends. So yeah, what does an example of that training look like? And especially like not from top down, from bottom up.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's think about how everyone can use kind of these tools and how we prompt the tools, right? So when we do training on this, there's kind of three levels of prompting. Level one is, I'm kind of like just above the basics, right? Because everyone knows you can go in and type like, make me a dinner recipe or whatever, and it does it. But we're trying to enable people to think harder about giving more guidance to the system, right? So we are teaching them how to use prompting where we give context in terms of what we're looking to accomplish. We tell the AI what format we want. So let's say, for example, if I have to give a PowerPoint presentation and I say, hey, create a, you know, I'm going to give a presentation, create one for me. And it just gives me like a list of bullet points. That's not going to work in my PowerPoint, right? Maybe that's for a keynote, but I'm doing a PowerPoint. So it's a different thing. The second layer of prompting is about bringing in more data, right? So it's about bringing in existing data sources. So for example, we say, you know, hey, I need to generate this marketing report and I'm going to upload the last 10 marketing reports that I've done. And I want it in exactly this format. That's kind of like level two is data along with context. And then level three, which I'm so excited about this, and I love to do this training, it's around structure in our prompting. And so what I mean by that is, stepping back from for a second, like when AI came out, everyone was saying that the new programming language is English, right? So like now we don't need to know like JavaScript or whatever. We just like say what we want. And that was true. And I think that's still true. But what I'm seeing now is that the best prompters, oftentimes their prompts look more like computer code than English, right? Oh. So they have like very structured prompts. Oftentimes they're multiple pages long. And so let me give you an example of what that might look like. Right? Let's say that, you know, I'm going to do a podcast and I want the AI to do my guest research for me, right? So the level one prompt is like saying, hey, I'm going to interview Aaron, find some information about Aaron. And it goes and like Googles you and like does a little summary. The next version of that is, if I'm putting some structure around it, I say, here's exactly the outputs that I want. I want an executive summary that shows, you know, Aaron's, you know, years of experience and where she's worked and what she's doing now. And then I want a biography section. I want it to say, you know, where she's born, you know, where she lives, whatever. And just by giving that additional structure and context to the prompting process, that's how we start to get really usable results that are very customized for the organization and thus like more helpful generally.
Oh my God. So dope. Ooh, I want to sit down on a training, John. Ooh, give me that training. There, when you talked about PowerPoint, have you ever used the AI Gamma, GAMMA, for PowerPoint?
I have, yeah.
That is fascinating. I just got a subscription. Okay, I'm an all-in person now. I'm an adopter. That was wild. I literally created a PowerPoint that probably would have taken me 4 hours in 45 minutes.
Is that crazy?
It was wild. So I love the specificity. That's something we actually talk about on the improv stage. This, when you get more specific in an improv scene, you get a better output. And the same is true with ChatGPT. You know, the more specific you get, the output is so much greater. I'm going to take 7 steps back here because I think I've talked ahead of myself and I want to make sure the peeps are on the right page with us. Can you explain, in the training I sat in on your webinar with one of our sister companies, JB Training, which we've had Brad Karsh on this show, we love him so much. You talked about 3 types of people within organizations who are, and you said this early on in the show, but can we touch on that again? Just because I think it's important. Every organization has different levels of comfort with AI, or has people with different levels of comfort with an AI, I should say. So can you describe the 3 again for us in detail? And then I want to start there and then keep going a little bit, because what I'm hearing too is there are some people in organizations who are very against AI. And I know this is you and me saying it's like a sensitive topic. There's the environmental issues that people are concerned with. But then the reality is, and I'm just going to say this for you, it's not going anywhere. It's only going to continue to grow. So I want to just start with really quickly the 3 types of people with that, the 3 archetypes of people with AI, and then we'll grow from there.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I think in terms of the adoption curve, like if we think about the 3 sorts of people on that curve, let me start in the middle, right? Because I think in the middle is where 90% plus of, you know, working professionals are, which is, you know, we're familiar with, we know what AI is, like we've heard about it. We've used ChatGPT, you know, kind of to your point, you know, we use it for some personal things. We use it for some work things. And that's kind of where I think most of us are. And so we see some of the things that AI is really good at and some of the opportunities. And then we also see there's still a bunch of stuff that AI can't do, right? So that, like, the idea that, you know, we're going to lay off our entire staff and just have AI, like, that's not reality, like,
right,
today.
Right.
probably never will be.
Right.
Honestly, hopefully never will be. So that's kind of where I think most people are. I think that there's also kind of a cutting edge of people that are, you know, you would call those the early adopters. And those are the people who are, I think, working more intensely to automate more of their work process and bring that into the organization. And so I think that's a really important function. I think that most organizations need someone like that. And when we do training and when we do, you know, governance work, we talk a lot about who is the AI champion in the organization, like who is ultimately responsible. This is kind of be for a bigger company, but responsible for kind of like leading the AI efforts and bringing in the productivity side with the safety side, with the training side, and doing it all together. And then there's definitely sort of like the late adopters, people who are, you know, more concerned about AI. And I don't know that those people are wrong necessarily. I mean, I think that the concerns that you had raised around, you know, environmental issues, et cetera, like I think that those are real concerns. But, you know, ultimately, however that shakes out, my belief is that in 5 to 10 years, maybe even less, we'll think about use of AI, kind of like intermediate prompting skills, as the same way that now that we think about like using the web browser or like using Microsoft Word. Like I'm old enough where like my first resume had that line at the bottom that was like,
yes,
can use web browser, can use Microsoft,
yes,
Word, like,
yes,
can use Microsoft Office Suite.
Yes.
And this was like 2004 or whatever. Like,
yes.
That's how old I am.
Me too, John. Me too.
And now that would be like embarrassing, right?
Yeah.
It'd be like embarrassing to put on your resume, like knows how to use web browser.
Yeah.
And in 10 years, no one's going to put knows how to use AI. Like that's just the thing that you'll do. You'll just do it.
Right. Okay. I have so many thoughts on that with you. I graduated college in 2005. So I was 1000% on the same page with you. I was like, knows Microsoft Office. And I will say I've thought about AI a lot in this way. Back, you know, however, 50 years ago, maybe longer, who knows? What is time? We didn't have cars. There were horses and buggies, and then cars came along, and then motor vehicles came along. And now we have vehicles that drive themselves. And then, you know, you look at the invention of the computer back when I was growing up, like I had that green screen computer. I still had the black and green screen computer in college. And like AOL, Instant Messenger, was the only form of other communication that I had other than my dinky cell phone that like did nothing. And then by the time I graduated college, we had Facebook and text messaging. And then by the time, you know, 10 years from that, we have Uber. And like I talk about living in Chicago in the early 2000s when there was no Uber, I had to walk barefoot in the snow to get my groceries. And, you know, like, and there was no Instacart. Sure. There was nothing. There was nothing like this that exists for us now where I can get on my phone and literally touch three buttons. And then in like 4 hours, I'll have paper towels on my front door. You know, like it's wild. That's Amazon Prime. So I really do. I respect all opinions. But if we take a look at as technology as a whole, like it just keeps evolving and evolving and evolving. And I listen to a lot of other entrepreneurs and I talk to a lot of people. And I think that from a small business perspective, most small business owners have jumped on board because it saves us time. It saves us so much time. And in a small business, there's only so many hands. I love that you gave us those definitions. I want to ask you two really fun lightning round questions. Okay. So what is one AI myth you want to bust right now?
Oh, that's a really good one. That's so interesting. I think I want to, this kind of goes back to what we were just saying. I think I want to bust the myth that AI skills are optional. And I want to bust the related myth that AI is like its own kind of like set of little skills that can kind of go off in a bucket, right? I think that AI is going to touch every part of the business that whatever business you run. AI is going to touch the work of everything that everyone does. It's not just for the CTO. It's really for everybody.
Ooh, I love it. Okay. And then one more question. What is one AI red flag HR should not ignore?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good one. So the number one ways that organizations get into trouble with AI is uploading personal information to non-secured AI systems. And so I'm going to give you an annoyingly long answer to the lightning round. This is such an important issue. And it's like my soapbox thing, which is...
I'm ready.
Larger organizations, this thing happens, and actually some medium organizations too, this happens all the time where I've described this to you. The CEO says, we're going to do AI. And then they buy Microsoft Copilot for everyone. But then they have a security and governance team, which is the work that I do, right? So these are like my people who lock it down so tightly that it's clear to everyone in the organization that the company's AI is worse than regular ChatGPT. And then they route around it, right? And that's where we get this term shadow AI, which is where people in the organization are using AI that's not approved by the organization. And that's exactly why it happens, right? It says that the company's AI is like just like worse than what you get on your phone. And so then people do it that way. And that creates huge amounts of risk and liability.
Okay. For my peeps listening right now, this is less lightning round, more like give them take it home for me, John. For my peeps right now who are like, look, I know people in my organization are using AI. I know they're using ChatGPT at work. We don't have Microsoft Copilot right now, but I know people are using it. Where do they start? And I know you mentioned this earlier, creating policy, but what is the very first step they should take?
I actually think the very first step is we have to know how AI is being used in our organization now. And that sounds so simple, but the reality is every team, sales team, the marketing team, the finance team, whatever, like everyone is using AI integrated into the tools that they're using. Right? Like you can't use a piece of modern SaaS software that doesn't say it's AI, like whether it is or not. So whoever's in charge of AI for the organization, there should be someone, which I said before, you have to start kind of getting a handle on that. And if you don't know how your organization is using AI today, it's really hard to set policies that will actually get used within the organization, right? Like the worst policy, and we've seen this before as HR leaders, like the worst policy is you say, all this stuff is banned. And then that policy like goes in someone's drawer and like no one trains on it. No one knows that it exists. No one cares. No one pays attention to it, right? There's no point in doing that, right? So the way that we govern AI and train on AI has to actually be related to how AI is actually being used in the organization. And a lot of people miss that step.
Oh, for sure. For sure. For sure. Would you say like, what have you seen people do to collect that data? Surveys, focus groups? How do they get that data?
Yeah, a lot of it is surveys and interviews. Yeah. And I don't think it's complicated work.
Anonymous surveys?
You could do anonymous surveys. Yeah. I think that the way that most governance professionals, the way that they'll go about this is they'll schedule meetings with kind of the head of every kind of vertical in the organization and just ask. There's technical ways to do this too. So a lot of more sophisticated security teams will do IP tracking and see who's using what. For me, most of my clients aren't big enough to need to do that. So we just go ask.
Love it. And then that's also kind of nice that you're that third party governance, you're not their HR department asking, you're a specific outside resource that's coming in to help partner with this organization. So, okay, with that note, John, tell the peeps where they can find you if they need you and your services. Where can they go?
Sure, absolutely. So our website is perceptual.com. I'm sure there'll be a link in the notes. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn as well. I'll leave that link as well. I love to meet people, just love to talk about AI. If you go to our website, you get in our newsletter, kind of keep up with what's going on in the world of AI safety and compliance. Just love to be in touch and have discussions with people.
Ooh, John, I'm going to join your newsletter. I'm excited because I like to know. This is fun for me. Thank you so much for joining me on the play date. Thank you for being in the sandbox. And thank you to my peeps for listening and taking some time for you today. All right. Bye, John.
Thanks, Erin. Thanks for having me.
Okay, peeps, before we go, I want to zoom out for a second. AI is not replacing leadership. It's revealing it. The leaders who win here are the ones who invite conversation, invest in learning, and build guardrails with their people, not for their people. This is a community effort. HR cannot do this alone. IT cannot do this alone. Leaders cannot do this alone. I want to thank John for making this conversation feel approachable, practical, and honestly, a lot less scary. And to all my peeps, my challenge for you this week is simple. Start a conversation. Ask your team how they're using AI. Get curious instead of judgmental. Build community around learning instead of silence. And if you loved this episode, please share it with a friend, a leader, or that one coworker who keeps sending you suspiciously well-written emails, sometimes with M dashes. And until next time, I want you to keep playing, keep leading, and keep building workplaces where people feel seen. I'll see you soon.